Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to a special edition of Ask the CIO. Today, we'll listen to presentations from the AFCEA Bethesda, Maryland event on the federal IT budget and the interviews I conducted after the presentations. We will start off hearing from Sunny Hashmi, the acting CIO of the General Services Administration.
We're an agency which is a little bit of a different point in our life cycle when it comes to our IT modernization life cycle. In 2008, we took a big step and consolidated all of our commodity IT services under the Office of the CIO. We don't have as many large bureaus, although we have two large bureaus within GSA, the Federal Acquisition Service and the Public Building Service, and then several smaller agencies and offices that we support. But all of the commodity IT, including the networks, the data centers, the mobile devices, the desktop, the operating system layer down was consolidated in 2008. That allowed us to move out on more aggressive approaches to streamline, consolidate, optimize our commodity IT area since 2008 through, you know, in the last 5 years or so. And that's allowed us to cut our commodity IT budget by about 25% over the last 3 years alone. So, you know, it's gone from an overall top line for our total IT spend has gone from somewhere in the neighborhood of about $600 million down to about $480, $490 million. However, our applications, business application offices stayed federated until last year when, after really exhausting to a certain extent, that commodity IT play through migration to cloud, through going to one service provider for all outsourcing of network management, one wireless contract, one hardware purchase agreement, all of those things allowed us to gain tremendous efficiencies. And last year, under the direction of our administrator, we take the next step in that journey to consolidate all of IT, all reported and non-reported IT under the Office of the CIO. We created a new organization within GSA that merges the former CIOs of the Federal Acquisition Service, the Federal Building Service, and other bureaus into one organization that sort of sets the stage for the next 5 years for us. Because the next 5 years journey for us is very different than the last 5 years. Where we are today, as benchmarked against my peers and industry and government, we are a fairly efficient IT commodity provider. When it comes to infrastructure, when it comes to the stack up to the OS, mobile devices, and so forth, we're fairly efficient. We have more room to grow. We have more areas to push. We have some legacy data centers. We have some more virtualization, more outsourcing to do. But we're within 5 percentage points, depending on which metric you look at, of where we need to be in that space. However, the real opportunities for us lie in optimizing business applications. We have tremendous legacy. We have to modernize it to not only reduce costs, but then reinvest that cost into more mission functions. We have tremendous duplication between different bureaus on sort of the back to mid-end applications, case management systems, financial systems. We're working very actively right now to look at outsourcing through shared service providers, our financial system, as well as our human capital system. These are the systems that are consuming lots of mind share, lots of budgets, that I think that other folks have kind of solved those problems for us. And there's really no mission benefit for us to run our own payroll system or on HR IT system. And so we want to get out of the business where it's not really adding direct mission value and instead focus on those areas where GSA is actually on a growth trajectory. When you look at our business, GSA is growing. Our Federal Building Service, the president just committed about $1.6 billion in the next 2 years to invest in the nation's buildings. We're the largest landlord in the world. We manage 10,000 buildings. We manage over a third of a billion square feet in office space. And we do it today the way we did it in 1964. And there's got to be a disconnect there, right? So over the last few years, we've invested a lot of energy in modernizing and smartening up our building. So the building can know when there's a problem. We can optimize the energy use. We can optimize the experience for our tenants. And we want to do it to our entire portfolio. So as we invest the next $1.6 billion in our energy buildings, we want to make sure those buildings are the smartest, energy-efficient buildings in the world. And that's where IT comes in. Because a lot of IT goes into our building technologies to enable for those buildings to operate in that way. On the federal acquisition side, our GSA business is changing completely through strategic sourcing, through category management, opening up prices paid for our items bought. We are envisioning and building the next generation of acquisition platform that allows agencies to use flexible open database tools to get the acquisition process done, kind of like a TurboTax for acquisition. We're opening up APIs in our intergovernmental acquisition systems, SAM, IAE, FedBizOps. This is going to allow not only for us to provide those services better and more efficiently, but for the industry and the third-party developers to engage better and help us enrich that environment for contracting officers and for vendors. So I envision that day where the vendor who needs to register to do business with the government has the right data, the right processes, the right mobile app, and the right APIs to be able to do that from their own company's, you know, SharePoint portal instead of having to log into a government system, create an account, and then go through a very unuser-friendly type of an interface. That's where we're trying to go. But that all requires investment. So as GSA's business is modernizing, we're interested in investing in IT to get the business there. But we can only get there by finding more efficiencies, core IT spending. So the problem here is that since we've kind of exhausted the low-hanging fruit play, we have to now look at a multi-year strategy for IT. We cannot say, let's cut 5 to 8% every year on year, and we'll get there. We have to look at a five-year plan for IT and say, look, we have to invest in certain systems, platforms, and capabilities that will allow us to then reduce our legacy, get rid of some of our older applications, duplicative systems that will then free up the monies to then invest in mission IT. That's a multifaceted, complex play that we're trying to orchestrate here. But we've had some success in this. So for the last couple of years, we invested heavily in cloud-based application development. So we've invested in platform-as-a-service solutions and software-as-a-service solutions that allow us to build applications in the cloud at agile speed. And we've noticed that by doing that, for most of our mid-tier applications, we've cut the total cost of lifecycle ownership per application by over 92%. We've cut the time to value per application by 75%. What used to take about 6 months to deliver for the business now takes 4 to 6 weeks in one sprint cycle. That is allowing us to be better partners to our business, but also it's allowing us to rely on small, smart businesses which traditionally have not had a play. They can offer very targeted, very smart services. So we want to do that more of that, and we want to use that play more and more as much as we can. So as far as our budget play is concerned, you will see more and more migration from top-down siloed applications, tightly integrated stacks, to going to more of a commodity platform-based play, a lot more open source, a lot more open data. I'm instituting a policy this year that is going to mandate that every line of code that's written using taxpayer dollars should be in the taxpayer's domain, which is a public domain. We're going to move every system that we build. We're going to mandate that critical data is opened up as part of the design of the system, not as an afterthought. Those kind of things are going to help us kind of be a more modern agency. So you will see a lot more focus on investing in platforms that we have and maximizing them. You will see a lot more focus on mission IT. You see a lot more focus on going from legacy stacks to modern stacks. And from us, you will see a lot more reliance on teams like 18F and Presidential Innovation Fellows and interagency agreements. For example, we're working right now with EPA. They have a great FOIA app. We wanted to build a FOIA app. I said, let's not build a FOIA app. Let's just use theirs. And that's the kind of play that we need to do more, because FOIA is not our business. The Department of Justice owns that business. Multiple agencies have solved that problem. Let's just use somebody else's that meets the federal requirements. So you'll see less and less of our needs in the area of non-mission IT. So everything that we're doing moving forward is mobile first, or at least mobile enabled, right? So everything that we deploy, we are getting to the point, we're not quite there yet, but some more complicated issues like HSBD 12 integration for higher assurance apps and things like that. But most of what we're doing it can be done from a mobile device. And actually, the virtual desktop environment is exactly one of the biggest drivers to help us get there. By the end of this fiscal year, half of GSA is going to be on virtual desktops. And by the end of the next fiscal year, about 75 to 80% of GSA will be on virtual desktops. That will, for the first time, truly allow me to say, you know what, bring your own Mac, on your Chromebook, your, you know, whatever have you, to work, and it will connect you to the guest wireless, which is segregated away from all my private stuff. And we'll go through two-factor authentication, and you will be connected to the virtual desktop. But once you're there, it's all sandboxed away, and you can access the whole suite of thick client, thin client, legacy and non-legacy applications, and you'll be fully productive. So that's going to be a big play for us. So mobility is beyond just the public building service play for us. It's actually how we're going to operate in the future. And it's saving us $24 million every year, right? So if you look at our business case for moving to headquarters, opening up the walls, going to a fully shareable space, it's hard dollars. It's $24 million a year and leases we don't have to pay for anymore because everybody's using the shared space. That's real money. $24 million will allow me to do a lot more cooler things for my business and just paying the rent.
We have to take a break. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Today we're listening to presentations from the AFSCEA Bethesda, Maryland event on the federal IT budget and the interviews I conducted after the presentations. When we return, I sat down with GSA's acting CIO, Sunny Hashmi, to delve deeper into some of the priorities he just mentioned.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio 1500.
Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Today, we look at the federal IT budget. I sat down with GSA's acting CIO, Sunny Hashmi, after he spoke at the recent AFSCEA Bethesda breakfast to learn more about the priorities for 2014 and beyond.
I wanted to touch upon a couple of things you said during the presentation. Let me start with the VDI. It's interesting that you guys are, your goal is, I think you said, 50% this year and 75% the following year. How much where you're at now with VDI, and then what is the long-term goal for that?
I mean, I think the percentages are aspirational as their goals. We're still working on fine-tuning the plans. So we'll know exactly where we'll be at the end of this year, next year, in the coming months. But the ultimate goal for VDI is to reduce the complexity of IT, right? So when you deploy a full-featured workstation, it's not just the asset itself, it's all of the management of every software component on it, which requires local personnel to maintain it, to fix it, if something breaks, to come by your desk side. And as an agency, we're going to a model where there is no desk side, right? So we want to be able to give the same experience to somebody who's in Denver, in Kansas City, in San Francisco, as the people who get in Washington, D.C., and use more cost-effective shared labor pools in our common kind of service areas in Utah and other areas like that. So when you have a problem, you're not asking for somebody to come by your desk side. You're calling, you're having a video chat with somebody who may be in a different region, but they have full access to your image. So VDI helps us get there, and it also helps us be more secure because all the patching and so forth is happening on the back end one time, done once and done well, rather than every desktop. Some might be out the network, some might be inside the network, have to be updated. So it helps us do all of that better, and ultimately reduces the complexity of IT, and thereby reduces the cost of IT. So that's kind of our long-term play around VDI.
And are you talking about a thin client, a zero client, or has that not been decided yet?
It hasn't been decided yet. We're looking at all options. Right now, we're looking at a browser-only or a app-based model for VDI. We may go to thin clients, but really the idea is, ideally, I would like to go to a BYOD model rather than a thin client model. There's obviously a lot of things, complexities that come along with BYOD, and we're working through those. But the problem with thin clients is that I think thin clients are fantastic. We're looking at it. In some cases, it makes perfect sense. But if you're going to be an agency that doesn't have assigned workstations and requiring people to come in every day, then you want to develop an environment that is device agnostic. And thin client, even if it's thin, it's still a device, and we want to try to get rid of devices from the mix rather than adding new devices in the mix.
You talked about a mobile-first approach where everything is mobile-first, or at least mobile-enabled. Right. Talk a little bit about that concept. Is that just the idea that every app, everything we do, will say, can this fit on mobile, and then, okay, now how does it fit on the network? Or give me a little bit behind that, too.
What it boils down to is every investment we make in a new capability, in business capability, we need to ask ourselves and ensure several things are built into that planning cycle. Mobility needs to be built in from scratch. It shouldn't be something we build the app and turns out that you can't access the application now from your mobile device, or it's too complex, or it's not secure enough. You have to design it so that from day one, somebody can access it from their mobile device and have a full-featured experience. The whole concept of a browser independence, the whole concept of contextual, where if you're going from a small screen to a big screen, you're getting the right experience. That kind of thing needs to be baked into the design. Oftentimes, It's too expensive on the end of a project to retrofit it to be mobile. But if you bake it into the design from the scratch, it's actually more cost effective and it gets you there better. But other things like open data, API enablement, single sign-on, HSVD12 compliance have to be baked in from scratch. So that's going to be our push there. And it's not just a policy; it's a culture shift. Every investment that we make, we need to make sure certain things are built in from scratch, rather than having to deal with them as an afterthought. So just like we deal with security, everybody knows that at the end of the day, if it doesn't meet the security test, it's not going to go live. We need to have the same kind of deliberate focus on mobile, on opening the data, or API enablement, on all of these compliance with, not compliance, but reuse first, opening the source code. All those things have to be sort of thought through and baked in first, instead of at the tail end of it. So that's going to be the gist of that new strategy.
And then the other thing you mentioned that I thought was interesting was the idea of apps modernization, apps rationalization. I hear a lot about that from other CIOs. Do you have an idea of just how much redundancy you have and then what you want to get down to? Is it 25% fewer, 80% fewer? What's your ideas behind that?
It's hard to get a number on it, right? We do know that there's redundancy. We've just consolidated multiple CIO offices into our office. And traditionally, there has been overlap and redundancy. And it's not just, we're not looking at redundancy just within GSA. I think there's redundancy across the federal government. So for areas like the financial management system, HR system, payroll, we're looking at options to leverage what other agencies have and reduce redundancy across the government. Within GSA, there are certain application areas we're looking at, like document management system, case management, identity management, SOA, backplanes, a lot of tools like back-end IT tools like version management and change management tools. There are opportunities there. What I don't know is what the percentage is. Most often, our first philosophy is to make sure that the mission is getting what they need. And it's a difficult conversation to make sure what the need and want differences would be in the mission. So we're working through those. Typically, our rationalization approach is follows the Gartner model, the time model. We look at the business value of each application, the technical value of each application, and we map whether each application falls in the tolerate, invest, migrate, or eliminate category. And that helps us set up a roadmap for where we're going, both in the cost and investment perspective, but also from a rationalization perspective. So some of the projects that you're aware of, like the Common Acquisition Platform, are going to ultimately consolidate hundreds, dozens if not hundreds of acquisition-type systems into a common platform. It's not a very simple way to get there, but over years it will reduce tons of complexity and tons of redundancy. But if you looked at them just individually today, they won't appear to be redundant. However, I think they need to be better strategically aligned to a bigger strategy. So that's kind of our approach. But I can't give you a percentage, but there are certainly opportunity areas that we're looking at.
Do you have an inventory already of all your apps, or is that the starting point?
No, absolutely. We have an inventory of apps. And like anything else, it's always going to be so accurate, right? So the universe changes every day underneath our feet like everywhere else. But we have an inventory, which I think I have a 90% confidence in.
And any surprises in terms of, do you have seven different, I'll pick on SharePoint because that's right. An obvious one. I know you've already consolidated your email. I know you've done a lot of that back office. Any surprises that jump out at you?
Not surprises. I think we've known for some time areas that there are duplicative. We have certain administrative type applications that are very redundant between regions. So we're trying to come to common processes for those and a common implementation of those. Things like document management, case management type things, obviously good opportunities for us to consolidate. GSA has a very regional structure in addition to a bureau level structure. So there's opportunities, I think, for us to do better by the regions, give them good tools, cost-effective tools, rather than having each of them having to build their own and manage their own.
And obviously, if they're in the cloud, they can reach them where they want to reach them. And if you go through that, the VDI setup, that all simplifies what you're talking about.
But at the same time, we want to be cognizant of, sensitive to the differences from region to region. Not every region is the same. The requirements, the needs, the environment is different in between regions. So we want to make sure that as we deploy common tools, that we're not glossing over that complexity. So we're delivering them a product that actually works for them, but at the same time meets a more of a consolidated approach to IT.
GSA Acting CIO Sunny Hashmi was asked during a press briefing about a new approach to data transparency at the agency.
The administrator issued a memo to all GSA mandating that every data asset that we have is open, shareable, within the context of legal privacy restrictions, obviously. That memo is the first step in us sort of being more aggressive about making sure that GSA data is available at least to GSA and then ideally to folks outside of GSA. So that's just the first policy step. We have a lot of plans in place. My team is actually working right now in developing an inventory of high-value data sets within GSA. not necessarily all for public consumption, but where we can share data within GSA to be better managers, better leaders. So there's going to be a lot of work in this area. We're going to continue to focus on this. But culture change comes with time. I think we have to earn the trust of our business partners that we're not going to treat their data without the most, focus, highest focus on security, privacy, sensitivities around the different data sets. We have to earn that trust. But at the same time, I think the value is immediate and it's very real in many cases. So you want to also earn the trust by saying, now that you've shared your data with us, we can actually do good things with it. And it's actually adding value. It's not just a practice to share data for the sake of sharing data, but it's actually leading to better management, better oversight, better strategic interests between different agencies.
We have to take a break. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Today we're listening to presentations from the recent FCA Bethesda, Maryland event on the federal IT budget and the interviews I conducted after the presentations. When we return, you'll hear from Cheryl Cook, the Agriculture Department's CIO.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also...
that bid protest on the DOD contract.
Right, but did you know...
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about...
OMB's digital strategy.
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Today we're talking about the federal IT budget. I sat down with Cheryl Cook, the Agriculture Department's Chief Information Officer, to discuss her plans to help create a more mobile USDA workforce.
Let me start with the comment you made around moving to more web-based platforms. You said that because of some budget help that maybe you got in 14 and 15, that maybe there's some improvements coming around. Just give me a sense of where you see the biggest improvements in the short term.
Over the last few years, in particular, the Food Safety Inspection Service has been moving to their web-based system, the public health information system that lets them interact with the companies they regulate through a web portal instead of having to rely on face-to-face interactions or paper-based interactions. But a number of our field-based agencies that are working with farmers and ranchers have been doing the same thing, trying to modernize the Roosevelt administration delivery structure to actually function on an Obama administration budget. The Farm Service Agency, about a year ago, rolled out the first iteration of their MIDAS, Modernization and Innovation in the Delivery of Agricultural Services, a solution. There are a number of additional modules that they're working on that are going to progressively come out over the next couple of months and years. And the Natural Resources Conservation Service is going to be rolling out their Client Gateway, which is a web portal for farmers and ranchers who do business with them by the end of this fiscal year so that they can begin to deliver services online. Their objective is to be able to have their field staff out in the field literally 75% of their time and not tied to their desk doing paperwork. And at the same time give their producers that they're doing business with better access to services.
The services that you're offering is both for your employees to input data, but also for the customers to either find or apply or somehow input data as well?
Right, both for financial assistance and for technical assistance.
And then the MIDAS piece is something that I know USDA has been working on for several years now. Do you know offhand the next iteration in terms of what types of capabilities are coming next?
The next big thing will be the ability to do acreage reporting and inventory reporting in MIDAS as opposed to some of the legacy systems that are, a couple of them are still on mainframe and, trying to move that process into the 21st century. Getting to a point where a farmer who may have land that spills over county lines can go to one county office and do business is itself an improvement over the way it's been for the last decades when you would have had to go to several offices because all of the data resided locally.
And then the other thing that I guess tied to this is the idea of mobility and telework. And you said the idea of getting people, I guess, the technology but also the devices. You mentioned just having the people in the field be in the field. I think you mentioned about 75% of the time or more. What's happening around that area of mobility and telework?
Mobility is big, not just for the field-based agencies, but for the regulatory agencies. If you can walk around with a smartphone in your pocket and be reporting data in real time, for food safety events or animal health and diagnostic events. Obviously, that's going to give a better service to the public than carrying around a clipboard and paper in those areas. But the real exciting thing for me is telework. USDA has 100,000 employees, and not anywhere near enough of them have had the opportunity to telework because of the nature of their jobs. And as now we're in a new contract with access to Office 365. We're taking steps with VoIP. We're going to try to give employees who've never had the ability to telework before the opportunity to do that, in part because it improves their quality of life and saves them money, in part because it saves the agency money in terms of transit subsidies that we're having to pay to bring people to work in Washington, D.C., and really because we want USDA to be one of the best places to work in the federal government, and telework access is one of the things that drives that.
You mentioned that the Forest Service changing the way they do kind of their workplace. Is that something that, and maybe this is a little outside of your area, but that is being considered more widely across USDA?
Yeah, Forest Service is seen as a model for USDA. In the Yates building, they were able to bring two buildings worth of people who'd been across the river in Arlington back into that main headquarters building now. And that's based on a presumption that on any given day, at least a quarter of the workforce would be teleworking. So, being able to consolidate some of the 11 different buildings that USDA is in around the National Capital Region takes you right back to the teleworking discussion and how we remodel aging office buildings to accommodate the new way of doing business.
And then finally, you mentioned shared services as well. You mentioned NHTSA had gotten a FedRAMP approval, so they're offering approved cloud services to other agencies. Give me a sense of how that's working. Where else do you see shared services going within USDA?
We're doing quite a bit with shared services within the four walls of USDA because we do have 17 agencies and 10 staff offices that have historically done their own thing in a lot of areas where now we see the savings from doing those things one time together and then redirecting resources into more mission-focused results. Across agencies from USDA to other federal agencies, certainly the publicity surrounding NHTSA being the first federal entity to get FedRAMP certified has helped our marketing to other agencies that now are looking at NHTSA not just for their low and moderate FedRAMP eligible data, but as well because they're level 4 accredited and can take very high security need data as well.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. Today we heard from Sunny Hashmi, the acting GSA CIO, and Cheryl Cook, the USDA CIO, both presented at the recent FCA Bethesda, Maryland event on the federal IT budget, and I sat down with both of them afterwards to discuss their spending plans. If you missed any portion of the show, or to listen to all my interviews on Ask the CIO, please visit federalnewsradio.com/askthecio.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.